Check engine light on? Take the guesswork out of your check engine light with O'Reilly Veriscan. It's free and provides a report with solutions based on over 650 million vehicle scans verified by ASE-certified master technicians. And if you need help, we can recommend a shop for you. Ask for O'Reilly Veriscan today.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
In the shadowy corridors of power within the Third Reich, a figure lurk whose beliefs in mystical runes and ancient Germanic lore would leave a dark imprint on history. A man known in some esoteric circles as the secret king of Nazi occultism. He was a self-proclaimed mystic and rune magician who claimed to possess ancestral clairvoyant memory that could trace back to pagan times, long before Christian influence touched the Germanic tribes. Advising Heinrich Himmler, one of the most powerful men in Nazi Germany, he contributed to the ideological fabric of the SS, infusing it with his own blend of Teutonic myths, esoteric symbols, and a vision of a renewed pagan Reich. Under his influence, Himmler would endeavor to reshape the SS into an elite cadre of pseudo-religious warriors. This case file, join the theorists as we clown on the crazy house origins of the SS with Carl Villigut and the Nazi Occult.
Welcome to Alien Theorist Theorizing Case File 350. Nazi Occult and Carl Villigut. I'm Braden.
I'm Dan.
And I'm Andrew.
Zell couldn't be here tonight. That's why we took the time, because we were learning about his ancestors, and we're gonna from now on call him Podfear.
Podfear,
yeah, is that's officially Zell's new title.
Podfear.
No, it's dude, listen.
I can walk.
The interesting thing about this is I was kind of talking to Andrew.
That we're talking about Nazis.
We're talking about Nazis.
Nazis are interesting. They're terrible, but
terrible. Right, look, if coming back in fashion. Right.
Yeah. I mean, arguably, they never went out of fashion. Hugo Boss is still making clothes. Like, that's pretty fucked up.
Yeezys now has one shirt.
Yeah, got a big old swastika on it.
That's it. That's all you can get. Sold out, probably. The interesting thing I was telling Andrew earlier about this, I was like, if you take a step back, like not live Nazis, huge pieces of shit. Right,
massive.
But like, if you're thinking about like Carl Villigut and his life trajectory, the guy was like, if he peaked Nazis, like he was in at the height, and then he dropped off the face of the earth before he had a fucking
before the downfall.
Yeah. Before anything. Like he was like he was riding that high life, right? So super interesting figure. Can't wait to get into where we start.
So Carl Villigut, as Andrew notified me earlier, is that nobody knows who he is.
He's not
in your pantheon of evil Nazi masterminds, your Himmlers, your Hitlers.
He should be though.
If Himmler, like, let's say Himmler is Sauron, fucking Carl is Saruman. Right, he's the Council of the Wizards that he's gone to. He's like, hey, listen, I need your help.
He's the Jafar. He's the Jafar. He's in the fuck. He's a spiritual advisor.
I Yeah, I guess. He's like the evil person behind the evil person.
Like, totally. He's like, who's the guy? Oh, he's like, maybe he's more like Gaston's fucking sidekick, because he's basically just telling fucking Himmler exactly what he wants to hear.
Yeah.
Right. Like, he's like pumping his tires, being like, no.
Carl Vilga is an interesting. As far objectively, just being like kind of an interesting character in the whole setting that is the rise of the Nazi Party and their occult influences that kind of float around in the upper echelons. So Carl Vilga comes from, I would say he kind of comes from a line of what we're kind of known as like the Volkish mystics. Volkish being kind of this the German mysticism, paganism. Mixed in with like a dash of nationalism and like esotericism on top.
Yeah, this would be a really weird tent at Shambhala.
Yeah,
right.
So he comes from people kind of like Guido Meyer. Other names people might know or might not know is the like Guido von List, Jorg Lanz von Liebenfels, guys who were kind of big
all
in the occult.
All guys that you had posters on your wall, Dan.
Like of those course.
Type of guys, you fan? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Big okay. ones. Yeah. Who are, you know, these guys are occultists.
They're Volk heroes. They're Volk former heroes. Monks.
Volk heroes. Yeah. Yeah. That's a good, I think that pretty encapsulates it pretty well. so basically these guys who all, we're combining things like esotericism, which we kind of talked with the Blavatsky, that kind of thing where you were
like, this time was the occult was like, listen, this is like fucking, you know, mid-90s, early 2000s fucking Pokemon. Like, occult is that. Like, this is fucking huge. These guys are obsessed with it at every class, right? Like, it's nothing's bigger than a cult at this point in time, I'd imagine. Like, the rich people, everybody are participating in it. And it's not even just in Germany. It's all over fucking North America. It's everywhere.
Right. So, yeah. So around that time, you know, right after, well, between like World War, like right after World War One and then leading up to World War Two, yes, esotericism, mysticism, big stuff. Everybody.
What is esotericism? What is that?
The esotericism is the idea that you have this. It's like what we talked with Blavatsky. Like, there is knowledge that you have to learn from like secret masters.
Kind of stuff
or whatever. Okay, yeah. You know, there's a super universal truth that you learn from the speakers, the masters, whatever. And that if you study it, you learn it. That's kind of that kind of stuff.
Most of it comes from Tibet. That's
what we learned. So Carl Vilga was born on the 10th of December, 1866 in Vienna, and his father and his grandfather had both served as officers in the Austrian army. And so, of course, you know, being coming from the long line of military men in 1884, he began his military service. And during his military career, he served in the 99th, the 88th, and the 47th Infantry Regiments, and then in various parts of what was then the Habsburg Empire. So,
dude, and from what I read and stuff, and like, just a lot of trench warfare. This guy saw a lot of fucking.
Well, that's World War One.
Yeah,
World War One was like literally fucking trench warfare.
This guy was.
Well, this is 1888.
Well, yeah, but that's the timeline, right?
Like, yeah, even leading up, like this guy was king grand wizard of the trenches. Like, he's like, he was knee deep.
Have you ever heard it? Like, have you ever heard of the Trench Raiders?
No.
Like the.
What is that?
Like, literally, I was just diving, and they were like basically dudes that were armed with fucking knives, daggers, and like revolvers, and they would get sent into the enemy trenches and just go like berserker.
Well, that's like the guy. That's I was like the trench warfare where they like the Germans wanted using shotguns classified as a war crime because guys would get into those trenches with shotguns and just like.
Blast everybody.
Away. Canadians and Americans would get in there and just be like,
dum, dum, dum. Oh, buddy, Canadians, like, we've got a laundry list of fucking war crimes. Oh, yeah. Especially in World War One. We were terrible.
We were leaving food out for people. It was like, dude, the whole battlefield was like a fucking mouse trap.
But it was sent out poison food and stuff. I will mention we were doing all that stuff while you guys were on the sidelines, though.
Yeah. So you want those tariffs to come in, huh? Remember?
Yeah, right. Yeah. Here, taste this poutine, pal. Yeah.
You got some curds coming to you, Dan.
So during the early parts of his military career, Vilgut demonstrated a lot of like a literary ambition at the time.
Why wouldn't you? You want to get out of the fucking trenches. You're like, I can't do this anymore. Like, they're like, well, can you read? You're like, I'm going to learn.
He was a badass.
He published a lot of like verse and like, you know, poetry and a lot of stuff that had to do with like kind of romantic in nature, being like, you know, celebrating nature, mythological subjects, and a lot of stuff like, you know, regimental history, which I assume is kind of like, you know, charge of the light brigade, kind of evocative kind of stuff, I assume. Vilgut, you know, kind of doing that, he's described in his military files as being good at kind of forming social connections, which
charismatic.
Yeah. And which also, like, he was also a member of the Schlarafia, which is, I guess, a quasi Masonic lodge that he joined in 1889. And he attained like the grade of knight and office of the chancellor, and then he resigned in like
Grand Pooba.
You know what? That's what we should have renamed all the Patreon tiers to, cool fucking Masonic levels. Masonic. I'm a knight chancellor of the ATT Patreon.
That's a great idea.
Yes. Yeah. I'm a 33 degree prolapser.
So in the May 1912, I think Vilgut was promoted to major, and he was still serving with the 47th Infantry Regiment at the time at the outbreak of World War One. Why are we getting a countdown now?
Braden, what did you do?
I don't know what happened.
What did you do, Bell? Now it's recording.
So it was not recording before?
We're recording a YouTube, so it's fine. Okay. Zell's getting his money's worth for this one.
Podviewer is going to be fucking.
Yeah, Podviewer is going to be livid with me. I'll never hear the end of this.
So throughout World War One, Vilgut had a number of commands, which saw him kind of, you know, he saw combat across various theaters of the war, moving him around during that time, and he was, you know, he garnered a lot of decorations for his bravery. He was highly commended by most of his senior officers. And after nearly 40 years of professional military service, he was discharged on the 1st of January, 1919. And he retired, you know, to Salzburg to kind of hang out and, you know, enjoy his military retirement after, you know, they lost.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So with these connections and these social connections, he kind of did all that stuff, and he's still moving forward in his literary ambitions. Vilgut kind of became important to a lot of Volkish groups, and like all of that stuff kind of formed his reputation around this that he said he kind of claimed to be the last descendant of a long line of prehistoric Germanic sages. This is all part of kind of the Volkish lore, where it's like they had the German people were part of this line. Ooh. Of these basically druids. Like,
Dan,
like
there's German no druids. Claims. There's no claims when you can see into the past. He's seen it.
Yes. Vilgut did claim to possess like ancestral clairvoyant memory.
And at this point, I just want to add that everyone who knew Vilgut was like, the war really fucked him up. Like, yeah, he's a different guy when he came out of those
they
trenches.
Loved it, dude. This Vilgut had guys eating out of his fucking palm.
Oh yeah,
hand.
Dude,
they
I would too if shit. You were watching this guy fireball people in the fucking trenches. Yeah. Casting firebolts everywhere.
Fucking
entangling roots and acid ball and everything. Yeah, throwing all those weird spells. So this ability of ancestral clairvoyant memory, this is what Vilgut claimed gave him the ability to recall history and experiences from his tribe that he's descended from, like thousands of years. So he could just call that stuff back by memory.
He's the chosen one.
Well, yeah. He claims to be like he's descendant of like the initial Aryan race, right?
I don't think, I don't know if it was like a, the, like that's Aryan like at the, this point, but they were,
well, but like the superior,
Polish. Yeah,
German tribe.
Of yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
It's such a, it's such an old trope too. It's like when you come of age, you'll gain your powers. That's what happens to him.
Well, he's yeah, like he,
30.
He claimed that he received instruction. And this is like, this is kind of part of the esoteric, esotericism part, whereas, he claimed that he was instructed in the reading of runes, from his grandfather, other Carl Willigut. And, you know, this is that after he got instruction in his runes, he was initiated into the his family secrets, from like, I don't know, from like 1890 or so, like on, like, this is when he was being like, okay, so, you know, now, yes, I am, you come from this long line of mystics and powerful ancestors who,
that's the kind of family secrets you want. You don't want like the yeah. only family secrets we end up getting. It's like, yeah, you're adopted or your fucking cousin is your aunt.
Well, listen, uncle, you know what? Willigut's ancestors account. might have a little bit of a gripe with that now, because they're like, oh. We're just going to skip the ancestry between, you know, the 30s to 1945. We'll just skip that a little bit.
Willigut at this point is kind of like, he's going around saying that he is, you know, descended from this long line of like mystics and whatever, and that he has all of the cosmic knowledge that they have accumulated over these centuries, and he's kind of writing out all this stuff. He wrote out a series of these, like one of his books, I think he, or pamphlets, he kind of put out these 9 pagan commandments that he was written down, as like that was in July 1908 that he wrote down. And then like the thing is like pre-war pagan tradition for Willigut, like anything before that time is really sketchy. Like anything before then, you only have like word of mouth, like people.
Well, it's like, gonna to get sketchier.
So it's kind of like not a lot of people who kind of knew who he was, like or knew of.
He's a fucking mystic.
Dude, he's a druid running around wearing a robe.
Yeah, man.
So it's not like all of this, all of the records like about him being like pre him coming to prominence as like this Volkish authority is all kind of like it's not there. Like it's like people don't really like have any records about him or know about him. It's just people kind of like recently met him.
He's too busy dominating the trenches, man. You don't have time for that kind of stuff.
He wasn't exchanging. He was taking names and kicking asses. He wasn't giving out his. People didn't know. All they saw was a cloak when they were laying face up, right? And he ran over them in the through the trench.
There were these rumors kind of swirling around Willigut after the war about kind of him being involved in what was like the secret German kingship that was like, this was kind of floating around in that Volkish subculture that was kind of running around at this point and becoming very popular due to various cultural stuff going on at the time. And so he was visited by what's his name, Zeppel.
It's weird.
It sounds very Nazi-ish.
Yeah, Theodore Zeppel, who was the
Teddy Zeppel,
a member of the Order of the New Templars. Okay, because secret societies really big at this point. Like,
yeah,
but if you're not huge. In a secret society at this point, you're not cool.
If you're not on our Patreon, you're not cool.
Yeah.
Same thing.
You're not getting invited to any barbecues. You're not going anywhere unless you're part of a.
We got to get the ATT rings made up.
Yeah, pinky rings.
Yeah. We need our ATT secret handshake. We need to get that down.
Yeah.
Apparently Zeppel he visited Willigut on like 3 occasions, and one time spending like at least like 7 weeks with Willigut at his Salzburg home in the winter of 1920 to like 21. And he recorded his experiences with Willigut in like an extensive memorandum like that he prepared for the new Templars, because they were all kind of, again, secret societies. You know, this guy's running around claiming that he's the last in line of these sacred order of Germanic kings, ancient Germanic kings, he's on your radar. You're like, okay, this guy's throwing out a bunch of stuff. You're gonna say, who is this guy?
Well, absolutely. Like, not only would this guy be on your fucking radar too, because he's got like this credibility to him as well. Like, he's not only is he a fuck, yes, they lost, but how many battles has this guy survived? Right? Like, yeah, there's some credibility that comes with that, right? He's a fucking decorated war hero. He's charismatic. Like, we all know these fucking culty guys all have to be, right? You got to be able to fucking sell the miracle spring water, right? Like, yeah, so it's like you can see why people are drawn to this dude.
Either he genuinely believed like what he was saying, like, you know,
when wouldn't he, like, his membership in the fucking Schlaraffia or whatever, wouldn't that be a little bit of like a rival, like, secret group? So it's like you're kind of like, you don't think
he resigned
at that time.
He had already resigned his post,
and he was on to bigger and better things.
Yeah, like in, was it 1900s, so 1909, 1908, I think he resigned. So Vilgut told Zeppel things like he was the bearer of a secret line of German royalty. He showed him tomes, which there was like heraldry on there and like his own coat of arms and like a family seal that he said, this is proof of his claim that I have this, you know, this cool looking coat of arms, that, you know, coat of arms stuff that, you know, we made in my school. We made those in like sixth grade.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. In, mine was like a hockey stick.
They're like, this, I am the king.
No, but you can actually, like, especially Germans, like, you, they're big about coat arms, and you can look them up. Like,
I've looked at mine. There's like a, I've seen like a names place where you can look, and like, I have a coat of arms for my like original Hungarian name.
Yeah. Like, is it your like, is that your family's coat of arms, or is it just like a Renner one?
It's like my family's coat of arms.
Oh, that's fucking awesome.
Yeah. It's and not, he, it's not, it's
we,
not
well, we weren't fucking around with that shit back then. No. What do you mean, buddy? You want coat of arms? I give you coat of whatever you want. Huh?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
You want coat? It's not cold. What do you mean?
Well, you guys
coat?
Were traveling. Wait,
that's my coat. I walked. I put that out. I put that.
Why
out
not have arms on your coat, buddy? What do you mean?
That's a flag. So,
yeah. What do you want, huh?
He sold Zeppel on a lot of this stuff. Basically, I think from his like his very descriptive, very descriptive stuff of like talking about practices, religious practices, military organization, and like the constitutional arrangements of these ancient Germans, which also coincidentally, these things all seem to line up with Guido von List, who was already a prominent kind of Volkisch, which we mentioned him earlier. He was already kind of big on the scene as well. So you're like, they're, you know, Zeppel's probably thinking, oh, so it's like, you know, he's Guido von List is a authority on this stuff, and this stuff all lines up. This guy's got to be.
It's crazy that you would let anybody named Guido be a fucking authority on anything. Yeah. That's
just I think that universally through history, the worst name ever. Yeah.
Potentially.
And Vilgut, like, he also maintained that the original Bible had been written in Germany. Like, that was another big thing. Was,
that like, he, well, they pushed that hard. Like, they also pushed that, like, we'll get into it later, but a big thing for them was that, like, Jesus was not Jewish. Like, he was Germanic, and that's like, it's funny because they fought so hard for that. They obviously lost. They lost the war, everything like that. Everything's got discredited. I'm like, we still got white Jesus, though.
Yeah.
Jesus looks way more Germanic than he looks Middle Eastern. So
Jesus lost his blonde surfer hair and blue eyes, though, right?
Yeah.
You know how much sadder he would look on the cross, fucking beach blonde hair. Slick back, looking like McConaughey.
Yeah.
So from like the descriptions of Zeppel and his meeting with Vilgut at this point, you know, having that information, it's a lot of historians like deduce that Vilgut had like blended a lot of the ideas that were taken from like the Teutonic archaism stuff that Guido von List was putting out there, along with the Ario Christianity of lands we mentioned before, like those two big names, and this stuff will eventually become Nazi ideology. And so that's, you could say that like he was already doing this, like it's proto combining both of these, which would eventually form into, you know, doing the fusion dance into Nazi ideology. So
it's interesting. They pulled a lot of that too from the Tacitus's Germania. Have you ever heard of that? He basically like documented Tacitus. He was a Roman scholar. He documented a few different wars between or battles between the Romans and the Germanic tribes, and like noted how fierce the Germanic tribes were. The Romans lost several times. And in this, like, he kind of spent some time documenting, you know, how the Germanic tribes lived, their customs, their laws, and how like they pursued purity in their tribes. And like he basically described them. They're like, they're a people of their own, right? Like they don't look like anyone else because they're all blonde haired, blue eyed. And, you know, they started training their kids at young ages. Like the Romans adopted that too. And obviously the Nazis did too with the Hitler youth, but like they like a lot of what they had in this descriptions of these old school ancient tribe, Germanic tribes, is what they used to justify, you know, their Aryan race. And like, these were powerful people. This is where our bloodlines come from. We have to use this as kind of like, everybody had to read it and use it as like a playbook as to how to be a proper fucking, you know, SS member, a proper Nazi. So,
right. And so like, Vilgut had this very developed like chronology about the history of like the German culture and German people. And like, so much so that his stuff apparently started back in like 200, he says started back in like 228,000 BC. And at this time, described by him, like there were three suns in the sky, there were giants, there were dwarves, and other mythical beings that populated the earth at the time. And this is where his ancestors come in, which he referred to as the Adler Vilgotten, which I guess they managed to pacify a lot of these tribes. They restored like peaceful conditions after this long period of strife during all of these tribes around that time. And all of this kind of, came to a head when they they founded the city of what he said is Aral Juruvalis or Goslar in 78,000 BC. then in 12,500 BC,
Younger Dryas, like
the
weather anomaly, the impact anomaly, wiped out all evidence.
And it was like after that, he talks about all of these religions being founded that were like the universal faith of the Germans. And then it was like challenged by another group. And like in 9,000 BC, the wars between these two religions, climaxed into like the schism between these two. And then this is where they get like all of this stuff would like eventually become like, this is where we lost our identity. And there's something I think in here where it's like, he poses like these people, the people who challenge our original traditions, were like the descendants of the Jewish people or outside influences, like it coming in here doing our stuff. Like it's
such a wild time in history too, because you think about like how much like written history like just gets destroyed by another culture coming in and being like, no, we don't like your ideas, and just like tear all the books up, burn all the books, and it's like your history like back then is gone, like all of it is gone, like to lost to time. We will never have any idea what happened. It's always wild when I think about this kind of stuff back then, of when you have these wars of these ideologies, and it's like we probably don't even know half of them that were around at the time because of, you know, war.
They got wiped out, or if they didn't have any written language.
Getting wiped out and then like, meh. Too bad, so sad.
So in the early 1920s, like, you know, I guess after developing all this, Vilgut became convinced that he was a target of persecution and people of his tribe, which from the Catholic Church, the people of the Jewish faith, Freemasonry. Ooh. So he blamed all of them for why they lost the war and why the Habsburg Empire.
It's a pretty powerful trifecta. A whole group of people, the Catholic Church and the Freemasons.
And along with this, subsequently, of course, he founded an anti-Semitic league in Salzburg and then became like the editor of a newspaper.
League, called, well, like baseball?
And he found it. He became editor of a newspaper called Der, I guess it's a German, Der Eiserne Besen, which is translates to the Iron Broom, which is, I guess, oh, you pair it with the Iron Curtain, I guess. I'm not really sure. And then he would, in this paper, he would use that to push his views.
I don't know. I thought it translated to InfoWars.
And he used that to attack a lot of like the Jewish community and the Freemasons in there. So
you know, those roots run fucking deep, hey? Like this hatred.
Yeah.
It's crazy. It's
Like, and it ran so deep that in 1924 he got involuntarily committed to the Salzburg mental asylum. where he was certified insane, certified donkey brains.
It's nice to know that like Germany in the early 1920s, they were still like, yeah, man, you can't do that. That's not okay. Like, why are you hating so much? Like, wait a couple of years and they'll be like, well, it's kind of point.
Yeah. And then he got pardoned. Yeah. So there's no weird parallel,
which is like
today.
Which is like, they're like the, like getting access to like the full report of his condition. Eventually, like historians, I saw like it was really, I don't even know if it was that stuff that got him committed. It was actually like his violence at home. Like he was becoming,
I thought he was like a full blown schizophrenic.
That's what they diagnosed him with. Because I think this is, you know, but what got him there was like, he was starting to become more and more violent at home. You know, he was threatening to kill his wife and stuff like that.
You know, what's honestly though, you know, like now in this day and age, it's like, this guy was probably fucking riddled with PTSD.
Oh. Yeah.
Like trench warfare, fucking out the ass, like World War One.
Wife drops the plane. Yeah, you're dead.
The Jews. Like, but you know what I don't understand? Like, you look at even World War One, it's like, where are you even, you're not even fighting them. Why do you hate them so much? I don't understand.
That's always been a thing.
That's what I mean. I want to know why. I'm so confused by it.
Goes back way, way back. That take a
while.
A couple podcasts to
explore the beef
libel stuff.
Yes, like I don't. I don't know. I'm confused.
The diagnosis of him at this mental hospital, having a history of schizophrenia involving megalomaniac and paranoid delusions and grandiose project. I was like, this guy was a fucking megalomaniac. He was going to be a supervillain. Like if he was,
he is,
like, yeah,
he becomes a supervillain.
Yes. You can't get committed to an insane asylum and then start going on about your three sons, kings,
giants. I'm descendant of the gods.
100%. But you,
there was giants and the three sons in the sky. I swear to you.
Not listening.
Took the other two.
Now we only have to find.
There is three sons.
Not three.
No, three.
Oh man, that'd be so funny. He's just yelling at everyone. And then it's like, all the doctors are Jewish, obviously. Yeah. He's so mad.
So after he gets out in 1927, you know, he's kind of bumming around for a second. And then this is, you know, 27, 28, 29. He would eventually be introduced by his old friend, Richard Anders. And apparently, you know, nobody would have known then that it would kick off like this. But Richard Anders had recently become an officer in the recently founded SS. And he introduced Carl Vilgut to his chief, Heinrich Himmler, one Heinrich Himmler.
But like, thing is like, after 3 years, they just like fucking, they're just like, all right, you're crazy, but we're sick of dealing with you. Like, they're just like, what? Like, how does he just get out? That's what I could never find.
Like he got cured.
He was treated. They treated him. Treated him with enough fucking leeches and electrotherapy and lobotomies. And they're like, this guy's fucking fixed.
Yeah. Send him out.
He's good now. Little did they know.
Fuck. Should have kept him in there for a little while.
Yeah.
Forever.
So when Heinrich Himmler met Vilgut, he was apparently very impressed by Vilgut's and spellcraft, clairvoyant memory, right?
You know what's so funny about this though is like before, like you'd look at it and it's like these Nazis have put themselves so far on pedestals. Like we're fucking superior. We're the superior race. Everything is up. We're the best. We're gonna take over the fucking world. This guy knows. He's telling me the story, and it's like you're fucking. He's crazy. And you think you're smarter than everybody, and you're listening to this fucking nut job. Like, it's hilarious.
You listen to the Grand Wizard over here. Yeah, talking buddy. About the like, three sons. He's like, shit, this guy knows a lot about the ancestors.
This guy's been fucking eating glue in a mental asylum for 3 years, and now he's your guy. Like, he's your go-to.
Well, especially when you know that he was like,
oh, they don't know he was in a fucking, no. They didn't know he's in that case.
He has schizophrenia, and he starts talking, they're like, he has this insane recall of knowledge. And you're like, no, he has paranoid delusions.
Yeah,
and these like high-ranking officers are like, bravo. Yeah.
And I think around this time, like Himmler was kind of looking for this kind of information. Like he was, you know, he had founded the SS. They're looking for these
information.
It literally fits his narrative. This is what I will say when you get into this a bit, like. Himmler was a fucking genius propagandist. Is that a right word? Propagandist?
Yeah.
Propagandy, whatever the fuck. But he was like, he knew a lot of this fucking shit that he bought into. He knew he could use it as propaganda to manipulate people.
Right.
Like, and that's not only that, he's a fucking giant. He's a giant nerd. Himmler was a giant history nerd, right? Like he loved this shit.
I think he
would be playing Himmler. Dungeons and Dragons and fucking Warhammer.
I think it was, I mean, Himmler was always kind of interested in stuff that would kind of like unify like the German people. And it's like this line of like Volkisch, like the Volkisch mysticism and that stuff, which seemed to claim to run in this underlying thing. It's like kind of, it pulled on the heartstrings of like the German people of being like, yes, we have a like Germany hadn't been a country for very long.
We
like,
always, thing,
like,
like country, like the country.
You're always a Himmler.
Hadn't never really had a national identity. And this is
how Slytherin was founded.
And I think wasn't Himmler like Himmler didn't get into World War I. Like he
was no, like he was training. He was a fucking he was a he had a chicken. He deployed. Took care of chickens.
Right, but he never got deployed to the front. And then I think he always had like a he always had an inferiority kind of thing to.
Well, he's by all accounts a nerdy guy. He was always skinny. He was.
I think he always felt like an outsider to everybody else because all of the other German officers and stuff like that, they could bond. They had that kind of bond that you get between, you know,
bros.
War buddies. War. You know, you bond over fucking experience and war and tragedy.
He never had that. And then this stuff, like kid was able to kind of, you know,
he claimed to be a descendant of like fucking Heinrich the Fowler, right? Like King Heinrich the first king of Germany, right? Like he bought right into this shit because he used it to even make himself look like he was fucking better than he was, right?
So in September of 1933, Vilgut like formally joined the SS, but Himmler found out about his stint.
He's a little bit crazy. Yeah,
and so he had him join under the pseudonym Karl Maria Weisshorr. And then he was appointed to the Department for Pre and Early History within the Race and Settlement Main Office.
Awesome.
Which is a crazy title.
Well, it's crazy too, because like this is pre-World War II. We're getting into like terrible stuff. We're getting into eugenics. It's getting the scary thing about it too. It's like Germany was seeing what they were doing in the United States and learning from their eugenics as well and being like, oh, wow, if we don't start doing this type of stuff, right, these people are going to be more pure and superior than us. We need to start doing it, right? So they start ramping up the eugenics. And at first, it's like, we need to get rid of, you know, we need to keep our bloodlines pure. We need to get rid of people with disabilities, fucking terrible alcoholics they wanted to fucking get rid of, like those people to sterilize them. And then you start getting into Wilgut and this fucking... this ancient master race of Germans that are fucking,
you know who else we should get rid of?
Well, but it's like, that's when this stuff gets even fucking crazier, because he's like, oh, you know, we don't like Jews. We don't. And they use that to manipulate. Cause like, we're going to get into some like quirky stuff and some really kind of like interesting, cool stuff. And then you realize like, oh, they used all this stuff to justify doing the worst things imaginable, like literally imaginable. And it's like, you have to remind yourself, because you're like, this stuff is actually super interesting. And then you're like, oh, but they used it to be the worst people ever. Okay, good.
And so like Himmler and Vilgut's like relationship was very cordial. Apparently like they exchanged birthday telegrams and gifts to each other. They were always like maintaining correspondence, written correspondence to each other. They have letters proving this. And
may all the three suns shine on your birthdays. Happy birthday. Yeah.
And
this episode is sponsored by Moo.com.
Hey dudes, if you're like me and Zell, man, we totally think cannabis should be accessible, affordable, convenient, and transparent, dudes.
Have you heard of Mood.com? They sell federally legal weed, gummies, everything you'd expect from a dispensary, and shipping it right to your door. No Budweiser sweats required.
I'm serious, dudes. You can now get high-quality, 100% federally legal cannabis products delivered right to your door without ever leaving your couch.
And you can get $30 off your first order at mood.com/alien with promo code alien.
Best of all, dudes, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but dudes, as I mentioned, listeners get $30 off their first order, man, with promo code alien, man.
That's right. Head over to mood.com/alien or click the link in the show notes. Check out the dispensary and let Mood help you discover and expand your perspectives.
And like, from like all accounts, like Himmler either just he believed everything that Vilgut said, even though Vilgut had no real proof of any of this stuff. And like,
yeah, but when like, you sometimes were, you just get that feeling, you know.
Yeah, what I mean? I like this guy.
Yeah, he's
legit.
Got feeling about
feel my loins.
Yeah,
he's got no documented. You know, he's got a degree from Trust Me Bro University, and it's just like, yeah, this guy.
But again, I'm gonna go back to it though. He comes with that credibility. He's a fucking war hero. He's exactly but you laugh, but it's the truth. He's exactly what they want to be. He's this big, strong, fucking war hero, decorated. He's charismatic. He's like, that's the type of person the German people need to aspire to be like. A fucking badass. That's like, that's good. Dude.
And I'll tell you, sometimes these crazy people, you never know. I know this crazy guy that lives on the streets in Campbell River, like one of the most unhinged, crazy people you've ever met in your entire life. Like he's got 100% like dementia or something going on, fueled with like drug use. And he's just all over the place out there. And he's like screaming at me one day. And he's like, I used to ride a Harley and my Harley was featured magazine, $150,000 Harley. Bottles were on it. I was in the magazine in the killer. And I'm like, okay, yeah, cool, man. Like he's like, you don't believe me. I was like, I believe you. He's like, I'll be back. And he leaves and he came back with a calendar from like 2002. And he's like, flip through it. And I'm like, I don't need to.
Why were you outside long enough for him to come find you?
And so I work in one place. So he knows.
Oh, okay. Oh, okay.
So I'm flipping through it. It's like all like topless girls. So I'm all like, ooh, on motorcycles. And then I get to like Mr. October, and there he is, this fucking crazy guy with his $150,000 bike, and he won some award for like nicest bike in Canada, one of the 12 nicest motorcycles in Canada.
The difference is this guy's the opposite of that though.
Yeah.
Like this is complete opposite. You're like, you know, this guy's crazy. But then he has kernels of truth where it's like the opposite. Yeah. Like, I have no idea this guy's crazy.
What are you talking about? He's got his hair.
His hand-drawn coat of arms.
Like, what are you talking about? Yeah. That's proof right there.
But maybe this guy is the reverse, where it's like, this guy I know is so crazy when you talk to you, like, this guy's.
That you don't want to believe anything.
You don't want to believe anything. But this guy is, like, by all accounts, is so fucking charismatic and so steadfast and, like, well-spoken and well-educated and well-read at the time that you're like, fucking, yeah, I believe everything this guy says. He's so with it. But you don't realize that you're talking to a fucking crazy person. Yeah, well, like, that's the difference.
I don't know. I don't know. That was a bit of a... that was a ride. It was a wild ride.
Yeah, just like $150,000
ride. Yeah, that's what I mean.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, maybe they believed him because he's... just so well
they believed him because he's credible, because he's a war hero, because he's what they are aspiring to be like. That's what makes sense to me. It's like, you know what? He's a badass.
I forget he was in World War I too.
Well, yeah, and like, look at like there's tons of fucking batshit crazy famous people. You look at Kanye; he's a perfect example. That guy's fucking nuts, but he's talented and he's charismatic, so people love him. They buy his stupid shoes. They do all that type of shit. That guy's fucking batshit. He is genuinely batshit crazy, but
I don't know. He makes some pretty good points.
Really?
I'm kidding.
And like the thing is like, and there were people telling Himmler like, hey, this guy might not be totally on the level. A lot of this stuff that he's saying doesn't make any sense. Like people in the SS, like historian branch, like the people, like actual academics and stuff that were like members of the SS and stuff were telling him
the Annenberger.
Yeah. They were telling him, no, none of this stuff that he says is true. And it's not supported by any evidence that we have, like, at all. And him, so like, shut up, nerds.
That brings in what I want to talk about is perfectly, because now you start finding evidence to fit your fucking narrative. And that's what they did, which is fucking crazy. Like, Himmler created the fucking Annenberger, which their entire fucking existence was to try and prove that Willigut and their entire, like, Hitler's claims to being the, you know, the master race and all stuff was true.
Yeah. Right? I mean, like, they were out there being like, okay, you need to find stuff that supports this, or you need to make it up. Like,
yeah, 100%. Like, it's fucking crazy. It's so. Do you want to get into that? You want to take a break? Do you want to? What do you guys want?
We can't really take a break.
We can't. Okay.
No break.
I'll use.
We can kind of take a break. I could. I just don't have a break screen. But we can. You want to take a break?
Just get up. Do you guys want to take a break, or I can power through and peel it?
No. I can go black screen. We're taking a quick break. We'll be right back.
Hope we're taking. Okay.
We're back. I think we're back. Yeah, we're back. All right, where were we?
What are we talking about now?
The Annenberger.
You want to talk about the Annenberger? Mm-hmm. So in 1935, Himmler organized a meeting at the Berlin headquarters of the SS where he discussed his desire to launch a prehistoric research institute. Himmler took the role of superintendent, a position entailing considerable control, by placing him in charge of a board of trustees. Their formal goal was to promote the science of ancient intellectual history, and fuck, not only promote it, but manipulate it, apparently. So Annenberger basically means ancestral heritage. It's a pseudoscientific organization that was just basically like an appendage of the SS. And their main goal was to promote that Germans were descended from the Aryan race and they were genetically superior to everybody, as we've heard a million times. That was a big thing.
As Zell says at the beginning of every show.
All time. The Annenberger consisted of academic scientists from a broad range of academic disciplines. Probably the coolest thing about them is they went on like fucking various expeditions all around the world, basically to uncover shit in hopes, you know, of proving that they were the superior race. These guys were literally the bad guys from Raiders.
Yeah.
Like, they were the bad Nazis from the Raiders. It's right. Real. That's fucking real. It's crazy. Himmler kind of like, it sounds like he regarded it as more of like a think tank right? Like he would get everybody together. They'd get together. They'd fucking sit there and they'd plan these expeditions. And then they would basically find this evidence to justify their policies and their like just the most horrific fucking things that they could do. You know, they'd look back in history and be like, look, we've done this before. King Heinrich the First did this.
Yeah,
King Heinrich hated the Jews too. So we do. We have to
justify your mandate for doing horrible things. Totally. Like, yeah. Or your legitimacy of being like, we can make this decision because, you know, we dictate what Christianity is because it was here, like because we found a pottery shard over here.
Totally. Like, yeah. But you look at it though, and it's like Himmler, for how horrible he was smart. Like he knew how to push, he knew how to propagandize. Is that the right word? I don't know. He's a master propagandy.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Yeah. Because in this group, in Annenberg, he's got fucking archaeologists. He's got ethnologists. He's got folklore people. He's got basically everybody from different fucking professions that are credible. He's got doctors. He's got scientists. He's got people, genuinely credible people to work for this. And then they come up with this fucking evidence to be like, look, this is what we found. This is why we're the fucking greatest. And the people ate that shit up. One of the fucking coolest things that I've come across when I was looking at this, Dan, I guarantee he's heard of this guy because he's fucking rad. Otto Rahn, but probably Indiana Jones, probably the basis for Indiana Jones. So Otto Rahn was a German writer and an amateur archaeologist. He was born in 1904. He was completely fascinated with medieval legends, particularly the Holy Grail. So what he did is, like, his big thing was, is he believed that the Grail was connected to the Cathar stronghold in Montague in France. So this is pre-Nazism. This is pre-World War II. This is like, this guy is just a fucking, you know, somewhat well-off German guy who's super into the Holy Grail. And he goes to France. He buys a small hotel that he ends up like working out of and starts looking for the Holy Grail himself. Now, Himmler, obviously, super into the occult, ends up finding Otto Rahn's book that he wrote about his explorations. Otto Rahn ended up having to leave France because he ran out of money, but he wrote the book. Himmler finds it, reads it, and was like, I need this guy. This is our guy. This guy's going to find the fucking Holy Grail for us. Finds him, gets him a fucking sweet Hugo Boss jacket, and funds all his expeditions. Like, sends this guy around the world looking for the Holy Grail. You know, Otto Rahn.
He's like, I think it's in Hawaii.
Yeah, no shit, right? That fucking would be, right? But so Rahn literally gets all this funding, goes on all these explorations, you know, doesn't find the Holy Grail, kind of falls out of, you know,
favor,
Himmler's fucking good graces. They end up sending him to work as a guard in Dachau, which sounds like a horrible job. And Rahn gets to see, like, a lot of times he didn't really see what the SS were doing because he's out on these expeditions, right?
Yeah, he's not just seeing wearing a cool, cool uniform, like, hey.
Yeah. And this guy's Indiana. This guy's more like Belloc. Like, this is 100%. Like,
no, I don't think so. Because when he realized how terrible this kind of stuff is, he basically kills himself. He was also fucking Jewish and gay, so that didn't help. He had to hide that from everybody. But it sounds like he was not, like, he didn't enjoy the fucking, like, he's like, I don't really want to be part of this, but it's kind of shitty. He took the funding, but
yeah.
Anyways, pretty cool story. So like I was saying, the Annenberg went on like multiple different expeditions. They went to Iceland because apparently it was a particular interest to Hitler and Himmler due to the belief that the country was the area where the Thule Society took over. Right, talked about that before, which was pretty cool. They did an expedition to Karelia, the region of Finland, to record pagan sorcerers and witches. They brought along a magnaphone, hoping to record pagan chants. One of the only team's successes was finding Myron Aku, a soothsayer believed to be a witch by the locals. Upon meeting the group, she claimed to have foreseen their arrival. The team persuaded her to perform a ritual on camera and tape and a tape recorder. and she summoned the spirits of their ancestors, which is kind of fucking interesting. We get a little shitty when they did an expedition to Tibet. So it sounds like they believed that, I'll get into it in a sec, but they believed that the Atlanteans were the first Aryan race. Mm-hmm. And they fled from Atlantis to Tibet, and that's where they took refuge, was in Tibet. So they sought, you know, evidence that of the Aryan origin in Tibet. So they went around and they measured skulls and studied local customs. So basically they're like lining up all the Tibetan people and trying to find ones that fit like the skull structure of like Aryans or of Germans and shit like that. Yeah, like fucking the bizarre.
They had the calipers out in there.
Literally, like there's pictures of that. Which
was phrenology done by them? Were they still like measuring people?
They were measuring. Like I was looking at pictures of it. They went to Scandinavia because they were in search of Mjolnir, Thor's hammer, because they believed that that was like one of the first super weapons that generated unnatural energies.
What the goal of these Nazis to think that they were going to be
worthy. They would be the only people worthy. I mean, listen, the Hemsworths, pretty fucking, fit the bill. Even the oldest one, the one from Westworld and other shitty B movies. And then obviously France, they went to Montague to look into that, but like, it's pretty fucking wild. Like you think about it, pretend they weren't doing this for shitty reasons.
Yeah.
Kind of cool.
It's cool. They're doing like,
Indiana Jones.
Yeah. They're going on a worldwide history hunt, trying to track down their heritage and the proof of the stories that they believe. It is cool until you're like,
until you realize they were using it to justify fucking genocide and horrible.
It's
always when they're
sending people out there to find, it's like, you're not going out there because, mostly, you know, legit archaeologists and stuff. Like, you're going out to kind of disprove stuff. Like, you go out there looking for, you know, ways to disprove a theory or like what a challenge another theory to be like. These guys are going out there
subjective.
These guys are not these guys objective. They're not they're not going out there to be like we're gonna see what's in this area and then that'll tell us about this. It's what we're going to go there and if we find stuff, this means this. Like,
it's kind of interesting. Like,
you're genuinely looking for the evidence to prove your theory.
They literally went looking for like Longinus's spear, like the Holy Lance, which they did get. If it is the real one, they did get it. But it's kind of cool because, like, so if you don't know what Longinus's spear is it's the spear that supposedly pierced Jesus's fucking rib cage while he was on the cross during the crucifixion. And it said that whoever possesses the spear will have the power to control the world.
Like, you can find any like reasonably old looking Roman spear tip and just be like,
Totally. But so supposedly like it was in Vienna, right? And Hitler saw it when he was a kid and he became fucking obsessed with it. Apparently when he saw it, he had a vision of the future.
I want that shit.
Yeah. And, but it's cool things like, so you look into the history of Longinus' spear and supposedly Charlemagne, which like the first emperor of Rome, wielded that for 47 consecutive battles, and the day he dropped it is the day he died, right? Like, made up potentially, right? But
it's like going to look for Excalibur and being like, wow, I found it. There's all these things you see people like, all the jokes every time they find like a sword in a lake, they're like, it's Excalibur. But apparently, like, they were doing that all the time, like, people were tossing swords into lakes all the fucking time.
You say that, but the Nazis did recover a spear that they said was the Spear of Destiny, Longinus' spear. Hitler ordered it taken to Nuremberg in 1945. When the Allies recovered the spear, Hitler committed suicide and died.
It's like, we were already there.
I think it was a spear. Okay. I had nothing to do with them losing the war. I think it was
They were already losing the war.
I don't remember any pictures of Hitler just wielding the spear.
Well, so he should have. They would have won.
They would have won.
If they would have went into Russia with a spear, they probably would have things would have been better.
Tossing hearts with a big spear.
Yeah.
Way better.
So yeah, tie this all together, I guess Himmler and Vilgut started putting together the idea that we need a base. We need a supervillain.
No, we don't just need a base. We need a like any good supervillain, like Cobra, like anybody, you need fucking castle.
Yeah.
You need castle. A Temple of Doom. Yeah.
We need a castle.
So they would go ahead and take over Wuvelsburg Castle, which is located in Westphalia. And this was the place that was designated by Himmler in the mid 1930s that was going to become the spiritual and ideological center for the SS.
They actually called it the Nazi Temple of Doom.
I don't think so, but yes, maybe
that's what it's referred to. That's what it's referred
maybe the, maybe the Americans mean, call it yeah, American, like that's cool. Yeah,
no, like the American, it's referred to now as the Nazi Temple of Doom.
Yes, very much so, because this is where Himmler envisioned all of the cultic and like all of the esoteric rituals that they were going to perform with the SS leaders.
You'd
would be at that castle.
You'd people reading scrolls and Sanskrit. You'd people in the corner
in your robes and the candles.
He believed that it was like his, like he wanted to be like the Knights of the Round Table, basically. Like he had a big round table. He believed that they were going to be just like that, like romanticized
kind of shit. Yeah. And Vilgut contributed heavily to a lot of like the symbols that they were going to use, a lot of the ceremonial aspects to the castle.
Vilgut designed the SS logo because those are ruins, right? Like and the rings that all the fucking SS members designed those too.
And this idea lived on and was passed on. It's still around today. It's called Medieval Times. You can go and do this because everyone was having such a good time.
Yeah,
but they're like, little
do you know, every
you met your little kids there with his little flag. He's like, we got the Nazi again.
Vilgut, you know, he advised in incorporating a lot of like a Germanic and runic symbols, you know, things like the black sun, which, you know, would become one of the key symbols of the SS, and then putting that, like he put that on, you know, in that north tower of that castle on the floor, like that whole black sun design, like that was Villigan's idea.
Did they inspire Soundgarden to make that fucking rad song?
Are you saying Nazis or Soundgarden?
I don't know. I'm just wondering. It's a good tune.
Are they?
They could be. Maybe that's why I died.
Because we found the spear again.
Destiny?
Maybe. Yeah. Oh my god, did Chris Cornell have the Spear of Destiny and then he dropped it, and that's
you know what it is. The pick of destiny is just the tip of the spear.
That would be a pretty rad way to
Are you descendant Brit Renner? That's pretty fucking,
do you have a coat arm?
That's pretty Germanic.
Well, my
Brain's gonna pull up his cut. Yeah, I got the, coat arms. He's got it like drawn in
crayon. I think the Hungarian name is Renner, so it's like S-Z-R-E-N-N-E-R.
I will say what these guys loved the blonde hair and the blue eyes, but none of the fucking guys in charge had blonde hair or blue eyes. They never looked like the guys they loved.
Hey, listen, let me tell you something.
They kind of looked like you.
I'm telling you though, the gene must be in me. If that's the case, the gene's got to be in me. Look at my son. My son is fucking blonde hair, blue eyes. He'd be
the poster child.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. 100%, dude. Yeah. They'd have my kid in a little uniform.
What do you call it? Not Lederhosen? Maybe they're Lederhosen's fucking double fist and bratwurst.
Yeah. Tossing his little heart. Oh, yeah. Back in the day, he would have been living that, but it might be in there. Like, I mean,
for a very short period of time, unfortunately.
Yeah.
He would have been pretty fucking popular.
Yeah. And then not so popular ever. Well, listen, I would have went to Argentina with the rest of them.
Yeah, that's fair. You already got the shirt. You're ready to go.
I'm ready to go.
Retiring.
It's interesting though, because like, I guess Hungarian ancestry, like it borders Germany, I guess. Is it Hungary? So like maybe my ancestors were, because I don't really know much pre-Hungarian Civil War of my like Hungarian side of the family.
Well, it, like there's like the Austro-Hungarian Empire, right? Like it's, you guys have same ancestors.
But like my grandfather fled the Civil War, changed his name in Canada, and then like
that's what I hear from all my old German friends. Like, oh yeah, but they weren't Nazis, they were the good ones, they like led. Haven't you seen that movie Valkyrie? It's fucking Dear Lunatic, I hear it all. The only ones that aren't are my, like, my stepdad's family. They're like, no, we were not. My dad, you know, my dad was a Nazi. It was, you know, it is what it is.
I don't know. I have no idea. So I wonder if that's the history.
I was talking to my in-laws, and she's like, no, they were part, like, you know, that movie with Tom Cruise, they helped out with that. Like, last name's fucking Katzer. I doubt
Tom,
it.
Tom Cruise, pretty fucking, Mission Impossible? What movie? Yeah. What movie are you talking about?
Valkyrie.
Oh, Valkyrie. Okay. Yeah. That's a fucking.
Yeah.
They helped. Yeah. They were undercover.
Yeah.
So after kind of making the castle,
they told Anne Frank to stay up there.
Yeah, they did. They were help hider.
It's in the journal.
Yeah.
Yeah. After making the castle, the ideological center of the SS, and like they were very much sold that this was destined to become the magical German strong point in some future conflict, like 100 to 200 years later, literally, you know, they're pretty close, between Europe and Asia is what they figured was going to happen. And it came a little bit sooner than that, but, I think, Vilgut ended up moving to, he moved to Munich, or moved from Munich to Berlin. And this is where he kind of continued his work in the chief adjutant's office for the Reichsführer SS. And this is where he designed the Totenkopf ring, the little skull ring that they had for the SS, like SS members and stuff like that. And then I think he was working under Karl Wolff at the time. And then by February 1939, Karl Wolff informed the staff of like Vilgut's staff that he had retired on his own, on his like his own application, citing like age and like poor health, and that his office was going to be dissolved like starting then. And so Himmler, one of those rare kind of spets like a sentimentality or examples of sentimentality, like he requested the return of Vilgut's ring, like his Totenkopf ring, his dagger and a sword, and then putting it like in his office, like in under personal lock and key, is where he kept all that stuff. So he definitely had a soft spot.
He was really Himmler insisted, like, anytime an SS member died, he insisted on getting the ring back, and they put it in the castle. There was a special room in that castle for all those rings.
Yeah.
He was super weird when it came to that type of shit. He's weird when it came to a lot of shit, actually.
Vilgut's official retirement from the SS was dated on the 28th of August, 1939. And then he was appointed like a caregiver whose name was Elsa Baltrusch. And she was a member of the Reichsführer SS personal staff. And then she became it like his personal in-house caregiver until his death in the 3rd of January, 1946. Which was like, he was like, I mean, he was pretty much like towards the end of his life. Just from most reports, I think he was not very lucid. Like, it's kind of like we said, like, he saw the rise. And it was kind of like, he went out on top, I guess you could say. Like, this is what this whole thing was.
He didn't live through the down. Like, I guess.
Dude, like he peaked. he's like, the empire lives strong. It's going to last forever.
Yeah, I could die a happy man.
Yeah. I'm die a happy man. Yeah, he doesn't see any of the fucking downfall of it. he dies with a smile on his face, thinking he's set his race and culture in the right trajectory.
They got their super villain fortress that's going to stand for 1,000 years.
He is satisfied with himself too, because it's not like he's dying knowing that he's a grifter, because he's crazy. He thought all that was legit.
Yeah.
You know, like, he'd be sitting on your deathbed being like, I fucking took advantage of these.
And one of the most, and then when you got one of the most powerful people in Germany at the time telling you, like, yeah, everything you're doing, A-okay, buddy. Like, I believe it. Like, all these other nerds who are saying that you're wrong, I don't believe them.
But you imagine, it's like so easy for all these people to believe, because they're like, mm-hmm. You know what? You're right. We are superior. Yep, that makes sense.
Cool. That sounds cool. I'm going to.
Descendant of Heinrich the First. Yeah. Good.
That tracks.
Right? Like, just basically telling everybody what they want to hear.
And just like, it's he was a lot of this stuff. Yeah. Like, he, a lot of historians like going back and looking at this stuff. It's like, yeah, they can find parallels from other, you know, like the lists and the lands, you know, prior to his kind of his contemporaries, were kind of like all of that stuff was all mixing together. And they're like, no, he pulled this from here. He pulled this from here. Like this stuff that he puts in here, he pulled that from whatever. And like we mentioned, even Blavatsky, like Madame Blavatsky, like
hers from everybody.
Everybody was taking stuff from her. Like everybody was like, she was like the before it was cool esotericism. Not necessarily that she was spouting out the whatever it's called. I can't remember. It's
like racism.
like she wasn't kind of on board with that stuff, but you know, they took all that stuff and they're like, hey, that sounds good, and we'll
that fits our narrative.
Yeah, Hyperborea and you know, white people. Yeah, we love that. So yeah, and his whole, but you know, is it something like, was he lucky? Like he got, you know, he just happened to get introduced by Richard Anders, who is like an SS man. He's like, hey, you're always kind of interested, like how these conversations go down between these people. Like, hey, Himmler, you got to meet this guy
he's crazy.
Yeah. And Himmler's like, crazy, nah, he's not cool. Crazy. I love it. I love it. Yeah. I'm going to keep him in here. This is the guy who rides $150,000 Harley right here. But I don't know. It's an interesting thing. Like Carl Vilgut, again, I'm sure there are other people who are kind of similar to him, but he is extremely influential in the, you know, this whole development of this esoteric Nazi ideology behind the thing where everybody talks about, you know, they have the Thule societies and the Black Order of the Black Sun and all these other things. Like he was very much a big part of that, you know, having such a close relationship with Himmler and being always kind of like his stuff in there. He designed the Castle of Doom, like he putting in there, he's like, you know, where to put the candles, where to hang the banners, and you know what to put on the floors. Like that's pretty, gives you a lot of power right there. But yeah, based on, again, just trust me bro stuff, like he never had anything to back up any of his claims, really. Like he wasn't an archaeologist, he wasn't a thing who had like actual artifacts. He's just like, yeah, garnered all of this credibility based on his claim, clairvoyant, like ancestral memory, I guess, like however that works.
It's just weird that you like, and it doesn't, again, in the late 20s, this guy is certified crazy. So at the time they're like, this guy's fucking off his rocker, certified. And then after being released, rise the ranks that he did to,
like nobody knew. Nobody knew. They changed his name. Yeah. They changed his name and they put in there, and nobody knew he had been in an insane asylum. Like
the crazy thing, he's rubbing, he's bumping elbows with all these like doctors and scientists, and you don't think anyone was just like had a conversation with him, was like, I guess at the time though, yeah,
he's not foaming at the mouth.
He's like, buddies with Himmler. Well, listen, yeah. Buddy starts coming in. He's like, there's three sons. I'm a descendant of the king of Dakota. I'm like,
yeah, but you're like, making it sound like he's rent. Like I'm telling you, this guy was probably a little bit more eloquent.
Yeah.
Knew how to talk to people. He's charismatic. And maybe he actually fucking learned some shit from being in the asylum. Maybe he treated. Maybe he was on some type of fucking benzo.
Probably you start looking to him, like talking to Himmler about this guy and being like, you sure this guy's a level? And he gives you that look, you know, never mind.
I like to think this guy was foaming at
slit at night.
Like, this guy was foaming at the mouth, just going crazy. There's three sons, right? Full Alex Jones back in the day. And like people would be like, go to Himmler, and Himmler would be like, give him the look. And then no one wanted to say anything because like he's a made man.
Yeah,
he's a grand. He's Himmler's wizard.
Yeah, well, he's in the SS. Alive. He's in the Schufen Mafia, like he called it.
It's always interesting.
His buddies with the fucking Reichsfuhr of the fucking SS. You can't stop that guy.
Always interesting taking a deep dive on the Nazis. And that stuff. So
anything we get into history, it's fun.
Yeah, it's always cool.
I love diving into that shit. It's interesting.
Well, it's weird because you're like, some of the shit is so weird, and you're like, well, this really happened though. Like this
is crazy.
We know this happened. And you're like, oh, it's not even that long ago. You know, you had a fucking Temple of Doom where you had a collection of mystics
with dudes dressed all in fucking black trench coats, looking literally like textbook supervillains.
Yeah.
Like it's crazy. It's
I mean,
were they the death heads?
They were the textbooks. I mean, all of our supervillains are based off of that. Like, you know,
well, that's probably why.
Yeah. They were the textbook supervillains.
Like, yeah. It's crazy. Like
everything's modeled off of them. Like,
yeah.
All right. Well, hey, listen. You want more alien theories theorizing? Maybe you listen to this, you're like, you know what I could go for? Some more.
More Nazis.
More Nazis. Well, listen, we got tons of bonus content on Patreon. Patreon.com/AlienTheoriesPodcast.
Videos on there?
Yeah, fuck it. Three-part.
It's
unreal. Or even easier, AlienTheorist.com. Hit that support tab. You can go to Supercast, get that. We have hundreds of hours of bonus content for you, you know, ranging from aliens, history, D&D, sports.
To like fucking just... rambling, venting, and being stupid.
Yeah. We actually our latest Endeavor Grinds actually lost us subscribers. So people are like, they're grumpy. Just us having a first coffee of the day, letting you know how we're feeling.
That's a rule. First coffee, first thing in the morning. Like just, sleep, still in the eyes, all that shit.
Come in for teeth grinding. You know, it's fun. So go check it out. If you like alien theorists theorizing, you like what we do and you want to support the show, go check it out. And as we always say at the end of these things, keep those eyes on the sky.